I think a great lineup of topics today for you, and I know it's all going to be beneficial for us. I'm glad that everybody's here this morning. This morning, in my part of my presentation here, we're going to talk about money. Money is something that we all have to deal with, right? I know some of us are just thinking, well, if only I had a little bit to actually deal with, that'd be nice, right? And I know what you mean. I was in college very recently, and when you're in college, money's not something you have a lot of. And when you get out of college, it's usually about the same story. But still something that we all have to deal with. There are countless financial decisions that you have to make in your life. It's something that we all know that. It's needed for necessities in life, and a lot of the things that we do for fun now cost money. There's not that many free things to do anymore. So it's very important we learn how to deal with it at a very young age. And with something so important in our lives, it's all the more important that we know what God says about it, right? That's what we want to talk about this morning, is what a godly approach to our finances is. Does the Bible have a lot to say about riches, money? It has a whole lot to say about it. Probably surprised you how much there is. It surprised me. That was one of the challenges of putting this together, is actually taking all that material, trying to condense it down to talk about just what a godly approach to our finances is. And that's what we want to look at this morning, how we can look at some principles we see there. We can use wisdom in the way we use our money. That's what we want to look at this morning. The outline that we'll look at is we'll want to talk about some attitudes about our wealth, about our money. I'll kind of use those words interchangeably, wealth, money. Attitudes about it. We'll look at some dangers real quickly, dangers that the Bible talks about in terms of our money and where it can lead us. And then we're going to look at some practical wisdom in using our wealth from a man who had a lot of two things, wisdom and money. Well, women might be the third one. That's King Solomon. He had a lot to say about, he had a lot of wisdom, a lot of riches, and he wrote most of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, and we want to look at some practical lessons that amazingly still apply to us today. Maybe that shouldn't be so amazing since it's in the Bible, but they have very strong application even for us today. So that's kind of the brief outline that will follow this morning. The attitudes about wealth, true or false? True or false question. Money is the root of all kinds of evil. Careful, right? That's from 1 Timothy 6:10. That's a verse that's very often, I think, misunderstood, if not misquoted. Money is not the root of all evil. It says the love of money. Money, or wealth, that we can have on this earth is actually a blessing from God, right? That's how it's shown in the Scriptures, that things we can acquire on this earth are a blessing from the Lord. Money in itself is not evil, but wealth is actually a blessing from God. Everything we have on this earth is from God. I think we need to start from that perspective, to know the source of the things we have on this earth. Let's look at a couple passages here. Ecclesiastes 2, 24 and 25 says, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" You know, if our approach is that the things we can have on this earth materially are blessings from the Lord, then shouldn't in turn our approach be that we should enjoy those things? That's what it says here, is from the hand of God, that we should enjoy those things. And look at the last part there. For apart from him, who can have anything? You know, we've got to know that that's the source of any blessings that we are fortunate enough to have from him on this earth. Another passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. "As I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man." So God's plan for the use of what he's blessed us with is to enjoy it. That's his gift to us, Solomon tells us in Ecclesiastes. Not all of us will be blessed the same. That's just a fact. Not all of us will have the same amount, or in our lives will be able to be as successful as far as riches and be able to make as much money in our jobs, and that's just a fact. But what we have been blessed with, God, His plan for us is to enjoy those things that we have from Him. Money is not evil, but it's actually a blessing from the Lord. Don't forget about the Lord. As blessed as you may become on this earth, it's important that we do not forget the source of where those blessings come from. It's a very important spiritual exercise for us constantly to be able to consider the blessings we have from God. To be able to think about those things, to give Him glory for that, to give Him thanks, to be able to do that is something, a very important spiritual exercise for us. I hope that you already do this. Pray about financial things, about financial decisions, about maybe where you go to school, maybe a job you're trying to get when you're in school, a job when you're getting out of school. I'll speak from personal experience that that is definitely a decision or something where you want God on your side. You want God's help in that. Pray often regarding financial decisions because it's something where you want God on your side in that. And I'll just say quickly, this is something I'm very guilty of, is when you pray about something, maybe fervently and hard, and when God decides to bless you with what you have asked for, make sure you give Him thanks for that and realize that He's blessed you in that. I know often I'll receive something and I'll realize, you know, that's what I was praying about for so long, and I won't even think about the fact that God answered my prayer and blessed me with what I asked Him for. Moses, he warned the Israelites when they were going into the Promised Land. You know, they were going to give him this good land. It was flowing with milk and honey and pomegranates and fig trees. And it was going to be a great land. He was going to give it to them. He'd be ready there for them. He was going to help them take the land from the people who lived there, give them this great land. He warns them in Deuteronomy chapter 8, in verse 11. He says, you know, take care lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments and His rules and His statutes, which I command you today. Down in 17, beware lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth, that He may confirm His covenant He swore to your fathers as it is this day. Lest we get puffed up at our heart and think, look what I have done. It's important not to forget about the Lord. You know, we may think, well, look how successful I am. Look what I've attained. You know, I earned this. My hard work earned this. Well, it's God who gives us the power to do that, just like He would the Israelites in that time. Is wealth or money we can acquire on this earth, is that the most important blessing that we have from God? I sure hope not. I sure hope not. I'm glad it's not. No, it's not. Wealth is not the most important blessing we have from God. We see in Ephesians chapter 1, verse 3, that He's given us all spiritual blessings in Christ, in the heavenly places. And we know those are far more important than what He's blessed us here on this earth. And in Proverbs, Solomon actually compares several things to riches. In the same verse, he'll compare this with riches. And there's a lot of things that riches don't compare to. We'll look at just a couple of those. And money's not the most important blessing we have. Proverbs 16, verse 16 says, how much better to get wisdom than gold? To get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver. Wisdom, not something you can put a price on. I know sometimes that word we think of, well, that's, you know, older people, they have wisdom. You know, when I'm older, I hope to have wisdom, but from a young age, we can start working on being wise in our choices and growing in wisdom, having discretion, making good choices, not making foolish choices. You know, that's something that's way more valuable now than any wealth or any riches you could obtain. Earlier in that chapter, verse 8, it says, better is a little with righteousness than great revenues with injustice. Better to be righteous and have not much at all than to have a lot with injustice. In other words, spiritual qualities more important than riches, right? More important than riches. Look at chapter 28, verse 6. It says, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. Better to have integrity than to be rich. Better to be upright, to be blameless, to have character than to be rich and to be crooked in his ways. 22 verse 1 says, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold. A good reputation. You can't put a price on that, right? It can take so long to build a good reputation, and how long does it take to lose it? Just like that, right? And then it can take a long time to build that back up. You cannot put a price on that. A good reputation is more important than riches. And I think this can be difficult to have this kind of perspective of putting things ahead of riches, because, you know, think about the stage where you guys are at right now, maybe in college or just starting your career out of college. What is so much of the emphasis? You know, in college, it's, well, I got to take these classes so I can get this great degree, so I can get this great job, and I can make money, and I can be very successful. That's kind of the push, right? And then when you start working, it's, well, I need to work as hard as I can so I can move up, make sure I know the right people and connect with the right people so I can be successful. That's the big push. And oftentimes we can forget the things that are more important than that. And I want to emphasize, if nothing else is taken out of this lesson, that no amount of wealth or riches is worth the sacrifice of any of these things that we've mentioned. Righteousness, reputation, your character. No amount of riches you can obtain on this earth is worth the sacrifice of that. A lot of people make that mistake. Your character, righteousness, a good reputation is worth more and should not be compromised to pursue wealth or success. You know, if we gain the whole world and lose our soul, it profits us nothing, right? Let's talk about the dangers of wealth. Satan has used money, people's love for it, their desire for it, their trust in it, to cause a lot of people to stumble. A lot of people to stumble many times. And he knows that. He knows the dangers there are to wealth on this earth. First of all, calls us to trust in riches more than God. And the rest of them kind of stem from that, right? That's kind of the heart of the matter. We can trust in riches more than God. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, words of Jesus here on the Sermon on the Mount says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." We should be laying up treasures in heaven. What's the problem? What's the problem with trusting in riches? A few things, right? One is, it can take us away from God. We can't serve two masters, right? Jesus told us that. We'll love one and hate the other. It takes us away from the Lord. Riches fade away, right? We see here that the materials themselves can fade away. They can be stolen. They're very temporary. You know what? What did each of you bring into this world? Anything? No? What are you going to take out of it? Not much, right? Not much. Riches, they're so temporary. They're so fleeting, which is why it's much more important to trust in God. When we serve money more than God, it can also lead to covetousness. I feel like that's kind of a word that we don't call sin very much anymore. As far as our own sin, we don't use that word too often. Maybe we think it's more of an Old Testament word. But that danger is still very present today. Covetousness is kind of the idea of, I want what that person has. I don't want them to have it anymore. I want it. And what I have is not good enough right now. It kind of flies right in the face of contentment. You know, what I want what they have. What I have is not good enough. And that's dangerous. That's a sinful attitude for us to have. Really what it is a lust of the eyes. We know what lust is, right? It's more than just a looking at something. It's a consuming desire for it. A desire that the Bible calls sin. Envy. Envy is talked about as one of the works of the flesh in Galatians 5, a consuming contempt and an ill will for others. And really the danger in it comes from comparing myself to someone else, only looking at myself in relation to someone that I know. That's not a good thing to do. That's a very dangerous thing to do, especially when it comes to money, is to compare ourselves and only look at ourselves in relation to others. It kind of, I'll go ahead and put the next one up, kind of goes very similar to pride. They're closely related because both of them have to do with comparing myself to the person beside me. Envy says, "This, look at how much they have more than me. I want what they have. I wish them ill will, wish they didn't have it, and wish I had it." And pride is looking at this person over here and say, "Look what I have. Look what they don't have. Look what I've done." They're very similar in that way, and they're very sinful attitudes for us to have. Proverbs 28, verse 11 says, "A rich man is wise in his own eyes, but a poor man who has understanding will find him out." A rich man has all the answers, right? Can have all the answers because he trusts in what he has, and it's caused him to be puffed up. Another danger of wealth is greed. That may be the biggest one, is greed. Never, ever having enough. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10 says, "He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much, but the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep." Those who are greedy, anything they acquire, it's never, never enough. This passage kind of talks about, well, the more they get, the bigger the person who gets them becomes, the bigger his desire and his wants becomes. So it's never going to be enough. I don't know about you guys where you work. I'm sure it's very similar, but I don't think anyone is satisfied with the salary they make. And I'm not saying it's something where we should never, we should turn down any raises they would offer us, but no one's ever satisfied with what they have. That's just kind of a general attitude in the workplace. And as Christians, I don't think that should be the attitude that we always have. That what I have right now is never good enough. We're never content with what we have. As Christians, I think that we should be better than that. be on our watch against greed. Jesus said in Luke 18:24 how difficult it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Why is that? Because there's so many dangers and temptations associated with it. It can be easy for a rich man to trust in his riches and not in God, to compare himself to others, and give that opportunity for envy and pride. It's not impossible for someone who has wealth to enter the kingdom of heaven, but it is difficult, Jesus says, because of those temptations that have to be overcome. Let's talk in the remaining time we have now about some practical wisdom in using our wealth. We look at a lot of passages in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes about what it has to say about using our wealth, about acquiring it, and about spending it. Acquiring wealth. Let's look at what Solomon has to say about that. Proverbs chapter 10, 4 and 5 says, "A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame." And 13:4 says, "The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. Love not sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you'll have plenty of bread." Based on what you see in those verses, what is God's plan for how we should acquire wealth and make money? Be active. Work diligently, right? To work diligently is God's plan. And we know God's plan is the best plan when it comes to anything, right? God's plan for something is the best way. God's plan for us to acquire wealth is to work diligently. It's contrasted with laziness in some of these passages. The Christians should be hard workers, just in general. Christians should be hard workers. We see from passages in Colossians, Paul talks about us, we're working for the Lord. Work heartily because we're working for the Lord. We're serving the Lord Jesus Christ. We ought to be hard workers. God's plan for us to acquire wealth is for us to work diligently. Remember some of the passages we talked about at the beginning about enjoying the fruit of our toil, what we've worked hard to acquire? He wants us to enjoy that. That's His plan for us to acquire it. Work diligently is His plan for us. Let's look at a passage in 1 Thessalonians. This won't be on the PowerPoint. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, passage there that we'll read. Verses 11 and 12 in 1 Thessalonians 4. We'll start kind of in the last half of chapter, verse 10 there. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more. And he's talking about love one another up above there. Verse 11, and to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you, so that you may live properly before outsiders and be dependent on no one. So we are to work with our hands, to live properly for outsiders, and be dependent on anyone. We ought to do our best not to have to depend on others. I know that circumstances may arise in which that's something that must be done. People have to depend on others for help sometimes, but we should be doing our best to not have to be depending on others. Because as this passage says, does the way we work and earn a living, the way we acquire wealth, does it have an influence on others, on outsiders? Yeah, they can see what we do as far as how we work and how we conduct ourselves, how we support ourselves. They can see that, and it can affect our influence on them. The scriptures are very clear about getting rich quick and the dangers of that. Let's look at a passage in Proverbs 28:20 says, a faithful man will abound with blessings, but whoever hastens to be rich will not go unpunished. In verse 22, a stingy man hastens after wealth and does not know that poverty will come upon him. You know, you'll run into, young people, you're going to run into a lot of these advertised ways to make money very fast, high risk, high reward opportunities where with minimal effort, you can make a lot of money really quick. And you'll probably think to yourself, well, that sounds too good to be true. And usually you will be right about that. Solomon tells us about the foolishness of a man who's looking to make money quickly. Get-rich-quick schemes are frowned upon in the scriptures. In the workplace too, and this is probably common where you guys work too, there will be these big pools, lottery pools, where a lot of people there at work will put their money together, and I guess they'll go buy lottery tickets because they're going to win the jackpot. And what's the goal in that? So that they can never have to work again, right? That's what everybody wants to do. Make that money and never have to work again. Of course, no one's ever won it that I've ever been associated with. They just spent their money on it. But everyone is looking for that, to make that money so they never have to work again. And to have that attitude is something that Solomon says is foolish. It's foolish. The man who hastens after wealth will not go unpunished, as we see there. But what about when we do come into a large amount of money? Maybe through a bonus at work or something, or maybe an inheritance, and we come into maybe a large amount of money. What does the Bible say about that? In Proverbs 25:16, kind of an interesting verse here. It says, if you have found honey, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it and vomit it. Now, honey was something of a delicacy. Back, if you were an Israelite, that would be something that would be a delicacy. You hear the Promised Land talked about a land of milk and honey. That was a way to describe what a good land it was. So you imagine if you're an Israelite and you stumble upon some honey, that's like hitting the jackpot. You know, look what you come upon. But he gives some instruction here as far as a way to approach that. You know, eat only enough for you, lest you have your fill of it, lest you have no self-control, no restraint. And when that happens, the end result is not good, as we see at the end of the verse there. And I think we can take some lessons from that. That maybe when we come into a large amount of money, instead through maybe a bonus or inheritance or something like that, to use some self-control, to use some wisdom in that, to not go at it with no restraint, this absolute no wisdom, go at it foolishly, use some self-control, maybe keep some of it to give to others or to save maybe for the future, but have some restraint, some self-control in that. I think that's a very good application for us in that passage. Proverbs 21:5 says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty. God's plan for us making money is to work diligently to enjoy the fruit of our toil. Let's look at spending our wealth. Now, this is something I'm kind of hesitant to talk about because I can't tell everyone how to spend their money. I'm not here to present to you a budget or anything like that on how your money should be spent. That's a decision that we have to make. But I believe that there are some things in the Scripture, some responsibilities that are given to us there, some wisdom that is shared with us as far as how to spend our wealth. First of all, giving to the Lord. Obviously, that's a very, very important one. We are commanded to give back to the Lord. And on the first day of the week, we do that. 2 Corinthians 9, 6 and 7 says, "The point is this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows bountifully will also reap bountifully. Each one must give as he has made up his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." Unfortunately, I think this is a commandment that a lot of young people do not take very seriously. Maybe I say that because I did not take it very seriously. Too often, I think, we are scrounging bottom of our purse or in our wallet for any loose coins or dollar while the basket's coming around. And if we're always doing that, I don't think that's the way that we should be doing it. The passage here talks about making up our mind according to what we have prospered. You see, in 1 Corinthians 16, according to what we have prospered, making up our mind, the Lord has blessed us with this, we want to take this portion of what we have and give it back to Him, considering what He has blessed us with. Now, that's what we are commanded to do. And we need to make sure, when we are making a budget or a plan for our finances, that we are making sure that that is priority number one. That we are looking at what we have, making sure we give back to the Lord. And our attitude is supposed to be right about it too. You give cheerfully, considering He's the source of the blessings that we have. But helping the poor, helping others, taking what we have been blessed with by the Lord and using that to in turn bless others. That's a reflection of godliness, right? To take what we have, use what we've been blessed with to bless other people. Proverbs 3:27. It says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbor, 'Go and come again. Tomorrow I will give it,' when you have it with you." When we have the opportunity to help others with what we have, it ought to be something that we are quick to do. We don't wait for it, but something that we are anxious to do. Let's look at two verses here kind of together as far as giving to others. 22:9 says, "Whoever has a bountiful eye will be blessed, for he shares his bread with the poor." And look at this next verse. It's kind of interesting. "Whoever is generous to the poor lends to the Lord, and He will repay him for his deed." Whoever gives to the poor gives to who? Gives to the Lord. You know, can we imagine a better investment to make than to be giving to the Lord? You know, if you're asking me how that works exactly, I won't be able to tell you probably in detail. But what we do see is when we give to others, God can bless us for that. Am I saying that you give, your checking account goes down, God's going to make it go back up? No, I'm not saying that. But the principle is there, that if we are willing to share with others, God can in turn bless us for that. What the best investment we can possibly make, giving to the Lord, as Proverbs 19, verse 17 puts it. Remember what Jesus said, Matthew 25, He says to those who fed others and thirsty gave them the drink, shelter, clothing. He says, "As much as you did it to the least of one of my brethren, you did it to me." So we should use what we have in order to help others. Supporting our family, you know, that's a responsibility that we have, husbands and wives, spouses, providing for your children. 1 Timothy 5, we see there, talks about the widows. You know, let her household take care of her, if all able to. Let the children... I'm blanking on how it's put now, but let the children pay something back to the parents. That's an obligation they would have if that's in our ability to do. This is one I thought of it last night, actually. I realized I'd failed to include it in there. But hospitality. Now, how important is that? We're told to be hospitable people. Love of strangers is literally what that means. But doesn't that cost money to usually be hospitable? To help out others and to have them into our homes. Usually that's a financial sacrifice that we have to make. And I think if we're budgeting or planning our finances, we need to take that into consideration to be able to have the means to be hospitable to others. I think that's very important. And all of these, to consider our responsibilities that we have, it's important to know the state of our finances. I'm not here to give a financial seminar or anything like that, but I would encourage you as much as I can to not, if you don't have a budget, to have some kind of plan for your finances. To know what you have, because if you don't know what you have or any idea, how are you going to be able to know if you have things available to fulfill these responsibilities that we've talked about? You know, have some kind of idea of what you have, what the Lord has blessed you with, so you know what you could allocate to these different things. Proverbs 27 and verses 23 through 27 is actually a verse, the closest verse I could find, that talks about financial management in Proverbs. He says, "Know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds." You know, that's however rich or poor someone was back then was determined by the flock they had. Excuse me. "Know well the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds. For riches do not last forever. And does a crown endure to all generations? When the grass is gone and the new growth appears and the vegetation of the mountains is gathered, the lambs will provide your clothing and the goats the price of a field. There will be enough goat's milk for your food, for the food of your household, and maintenance for your girls." Some versions say maidservants there in the last word there. But he talks about the importance of knowing what you have there, by being able to manage it and have an awareness of it. And by doing that, it will help us prepare for the future, help us to be able to support ourselves there in the future by knowing the state of what we have. It's very important, I think, and very wise and prudent for us to know the state of our finances. And knowing the state of our finances will help us to avoid debt. Help us to avoid debt. That is probably the main financial pitfall. For those, almost the definition of financial pitfall. Spending more than what we have available to us. What does the Bible say about debt? Well, Proverbs 22:7 says the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. It's kind of an interesting way that it describes it there, by the borrower being the slave of the lender. And that's true, right? You have an obligation to pay this debt. Can't get away from that. That's how the Bible describes it there. We have, when we're in debt, we have less available to share with others, to do the things that we talked about just a few minutes ago. We have less available for that. As young people, credit card companies, banks, credit card companies, they want to get those credit cards into your hands because they don't think you know what to do with them, and most young people do not. Dealerships, they want to get those new cars into your hands because they don't think you have any wisdom and no responsibility to know what to do with it. And a lot of young people fall into that trap. I've seen a lot of young people, when you come out of college and you start working, if you get a full-time job, it pays a salary, you're probably going to have more money than you've ever had before. And a lot of people do not know what to do with that. And they'll go out and they'll overspend more than what they have. And the Bible talks about the foolishness of that. We always looked at that verse about finding honey, not to eat your fill of it. A lot of people do that. When they first start making a full-time job and they making a salary, they don't use any wisdom at all in doing that. We need to do our best to avoid debt because of the power that it has over us. The Proverbs talk about what it calls surety or a pledge or security. Really, I think the closest thing that we have to compare to that is like co-signing for a loan. You guys know what that's for? Like if I do not have enough credit or the bank did not want to give me a loan, you know, someone, my friend may agree to co-sign for that. Basically, if I'm unable to pay them, it's going to be on this person to pay them. And the Bible talks about that. He says, "Be not one of those who gives pledges, who put up security for debt. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should your bed be taken from under you?" Proverbs 22:26 and 27. And Whoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer harm, but he who hates striking hands in pledge is secure. We may be thinking, well, like, wouldn't that be a good way to help out a brother or sister? Is to co-sign for a loan so they can do that? I don't think that's the scriptural way that we can help them. Instead, we should be more ready to be able just to give to them. I think that's a wiser way to go about helping them, is to just give them the money instead of the foolishness that the Bible talks about in this. Lending instead of borrowing. Psalms 37, 21, 25, and 26 says, "The wicked borrows but does not repay back, but the righteous is generous and gives. I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken or his children begging for bread. He is ever lending generously, and his children become a blessing." As much as is in our power to do, the Scriptures say, is we want to strive to be in a position where we can be lending to others and giving to others instead of in debt. Now, I know things come about, circumstances may arise in which we have to take certain measures in order to cover necessities, or some kind of catastrophe may befall us, and I understand that can happen. But as much as in our power, by our wisdom and the choices we make, we should try to be in a position where we can give to others, lend to others, instead of those who are always borrowing. And the debt that I'm talking about, I probably should have made this more clear, is not the kind that may be needed for necessities. Like I said, a catastrophe may befall us, but the debt that stems from will be a more spiritual problem, like greed or like carelessness with what we have. The debt that stems from that is strongly discouraged in the Scriptures. Lending. Let's look at the verse we already looked at, Proverbs 22, verse 7. Look at it from a lending perspective. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. So if I lend to someone, they're enslaved to me, right? You guys probably realize that the position that it puts you in when you loan money to someone else, sometimes that can make that relationship a little strained, right? You know, because you start maybe, say I lend a friend of mine, $100. Well, then every single time they're spending money, you're always questioning them, like, well, I haven't got my money back. You know, you start questioning everything that they do. And they, in turn, all of a sudden, they're kind of uncomfortable being around you. You know, they don't want to associate with you. And it can put a strain on a relationship. Be very negative through that. And oftentimes, we're better off just giving it to them, just releasing them from that debt, just being able to give it to them in order to avoid that. Avoid the envy and pride that can come out of that relationship. Jesus in Luke chapter 6 says, "If you lend to those from whom you expect to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get back the same amount. But love your enemies, do good, and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful even as your Father is merciful." We lend to others, be ready to just give that to them. Be ready to give that to them. Even if that means us having to make a sacrifice, let yourself be defrauded, is the way it's put in 1 Corinthians, or 2 Corinthians, I'm sorry if I messed that up. But be ready to give to others when we lend to them. You know, in Deuteronomy, when Moses is speaking to the Israelites before they go into the Promised Land, he talks about it. He said, if you follow my commandments, if you're faithful to me, then you're going to lend to other nations. You're going to be giving to them. You will not have to borrow from them. But if you forsake me, don't follow my commandments, are unfaithful, you're going to be borrowing from them. We can see that the much more favorable position is to be in a position to be lending to others, to be giving to others, than to always having to be borrowing and to be in debt. Here, with the last couple minutes we have here, I want to talk real quickly about saving money. Starts by spending less than we receive, right, like we just talked about. And really, I think it comes down to using wisdom in what we have, using wisdom in what God has given for us. I think often passages like, we're told, do not worry, do not be anxious, that we're supposed to just have no regard for the future whatsoever. God will provide. And there are some important principles in that passage, I would agree, but I don't think that that's saying that we should not have any use any wisdom in preparing for the future. I don't think that's what that passage is saying. Preparing for retirement, having insurance, proper insurance, I think there is wisdom in that, wisdom in using what God has given us. Not a distrust in the Lord, but simply using what He has given us and being wise with it. Proverbs 13, verse 22 says, "A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous." A good man who's wise and who's prudent, and the way he manages what he has, is able to leave something for those who are behind him. Again, I realize that many of the things come up in life may make it difficult to achieve all the good that we may want to do. These things are probably all the good we may want to do, that we may not be able to achieve that based on things that happen in our life, and there are lessons that we can teach and preach about what to do in those situations. But as much as is in our power to do, I believe God has told us to, He's blessed us with these things, use wisdom in how we use them, responsibilities we have with that, as much as in our power to use them to accomplish good in His kingdom and to be able to help to give Him as much glory as we can. Again, this morning we've just tried to look at what a godly approach to our finances would be. I wanted to, if I had just a quick amount of time, I debated whether to talk about this or not, but I want to talk real quickly about finances in marriage. Not that I'm any authority on this whatsoever, but I don't have any statistics for you or anything like that, but it's not number one, it's got to be up there as far as reasons for divorce. Strife over finances. And if it's not divorce, number one, Ryan's saying. He's got the stats, apparently. if it's not number one for divorce, at least the stress and the strife it can cause in a marriage over finances. Not every married couple has a combined checking account or anything like that, but if you're married, you're going to be making financial decisions together. And all I would say, as far as that goes, is make sure that you both have a godly approach to finances, to what you have. So that when you're making those decisions, you can be on the same page as far as the source of your blessings, what we should be doing with those. That would be the only admonition and advice I would give as far as that goes. Well, I appreciate your attention this morning. That's all I have for my presentation, and I look forward to the rest of them. I don't know if we're going to have a break, I guess, for about 10 minutes.